Hello, my name is Christopher Benaj, and I am a developer with Patterns and Practices here at Microsoft. And my most recent project is called Project Lika, that is L-I-I-K-E. And our focus has been providing guidance for the mobile web. Now, I've titled my talk, Unicorns, Magic Ponies, and the Mobile Web. And your challenge as a listener is to decide what those three things have in common by the time we're done. So I want to start off by saying that the world has changed a lot in the last 5 years with respect to web development. In fact, I'll go a step further and say it's changed a lot in the last 5 months. I've been doing this for a while, building web applications, and I found that when I started learning about the mobile web, I was carrying forward a lot of old, antiquated notions that really aren't as useful and productive as they used to be. Now, I assume that if you're watching this, you probably think that the mobile web is important for web development. But the question I really want to ask is, how important is it? So, like any talk about unicorns and magic ponies, I want to first start off by presenting some hard scientific data. If we go back to the spring of 2009 and look at the numbers, the relative numbers of mobile browsers versus desktop browsers on the internet, we see that it was almost non-existent in 2009, less than 2% usually. By the way, I'm using three sets of data here that are publicly available. The link is at the bottom of the page. It's from Wikimedia, StatCounter, and Net Applications. But what we see is that in 2010, the numbers doubled. So we went from 1% in some cases, StatCounter, to 2%. And then again in 2011, the numbers doubled again. We were over 4% on StatCounter. And then in 2012, just this last month, the numbers doubled again. So for 4 years, we had the numbers doubling. Now, on average, if we look at Wikimedia, we see roughly 13% of their traffic is from mobile browsers. And for net applications, it's actually less than 8%. So on average, 10%. And the question is 10% really significant, right? That seems almost like a drop in the bucket. But that's one out of every 10 users coming to your site is likely now coming from a mobile browser. Well, and if that number doesn't impress you today, what we need to also think about is what the number will be tomorrow. I suspect that many of you out there are watching this on a tablet, or if not, I bet you have children that are using a tablet. Tablets are popping up everywhere. Smartphones are popping up everywhere. We see a new generation that is their primary form of computing. So following the scientific trend I establish in my second slide, if we were to naively project the numbers we see for these mobile browser usage out to, say, 2015, what we would find is that at that point, the majority of browsers would actually be mobile browsers and not desktop browsers. Now, that's a pretty naive suggestion there. All I did was double the numbers as they have doubled for the last few years. However, other people more knowledgeable than myself have been doing research. For example, Susan Nguyen of Forrester Research Incorporated, and she was recently quoted on her blog as saying, according to our research, the global penetration of mobile internet users will exceed that of PC-based internet users in 2016. So my point in all this is that even though you may not be thinking too much about mobile today, in the next few years, it's going to be critically important. In addition, ABI Research stated that in 2016, they expect there will be 2.1 billion HTML5 mobile devices in use. Okay, so now I've established a case, I hope, for why mobile is going to be important in the future. But now what? What do you do with this knowledge? First, I want to talk about the landscape of targeting mobile devices in general. There's really a spectrum here. On one side of the spectrum, we have native applications. On the other side of the spectrum, we have web-only applications. So what do I mean by native? Well, in the case of, say, Windows Phone, I mean applications that are built with C# or Visual Basic and that are XAML-based that are native to the operating system. On the other side of the spectrum, I'm talking about applications that use only web technologies like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Now, I call it a spectrum because there's actually some nuances here. For example, you might be using a platform like PhoneGap, which allows you to build an application using mostly web technologies with a small native shim for the particular operating system that you're targeting. On the other side of that spectrum, you might also have a mostly native application that has some HTML content sort of plugged into the middle of it. So you have to make choices. Now, in this particular talk I'm giving here, we're going to focus on the web side of this and not the native side. So I'm not going to go into in-depth reasons for choosing the native, but I do want to acknowledge first there are very, very valid reasons for choosing to build native applications. But I'm going to instead focus on the reasons you might choose to go with the web. So, excuse me, a few reasons why you might choose to build your website, I guess, as a web, on the web platform, or your application on the web platform. First of all, if it's a content-heavy site, that just makes sense to go with markup over a native app. Secondly, you might have existing skills, right? You might be a JavaScript developer. You might be very well acquainted with CSS and HTML, and therefore you want to leverage those skills that you already have as opposed to learning new ones to develop native applications. However, a more compelling reason, a reason I think makes a lot of sense, is that when you build web apps targeting mobile devices, you will achieve a very broad reach. You have the opportunity to work on devices that you don't even know about, right? If you target just the most popular devices, then you're really limiting yourself to certainly what is a large number, but not everything that's out there. The last reason for choosing to go with a web platform is because it's future-friendly. Now, what do I mean by future-friendly? I mean that we don't know what the future holds. We don't know what devices are going to be in use tomorrow. If you were to rewind the clock slightly more than 5 years ago, you might not have realized that smartphones would be as popular as they are now. We can't build native applications for devices that we don't know about yet. However, if we build web applications, then those applications are very likely to work on unknown devices in the future, because it's very likely that those unknown devices will all have web browsers. So I've said that the web is a future-friendly platform, but it's also important for us to build our web applications with a future-friendly mindset. Now, what do I mean by that? It is very easy to build a website or web application that is specific to a browser, to a particular browser. In fact, this is sort of the dark underside of the history of the internet, right? We used to have those little icons at the bottom of the page that would say best when viewed on some browser name. And we've learned that that's a painful experience, that does not project well into the future. So we need to be aware of how we're building our sites and build them with a future-friendly mindset. But now that begs the question, what does having a future-friendly mindset when building your web applications or websites mean? Well, my first major concrete point is don't target specific devices. And one of the main reasons why this is bad is because there are so many devices to target. Today, our market is flooded with different tablets and smartphones and desktop browsers. There's so many things to target that it can be a dizzying and overwhelming thing to do. In addition to that, we have found, again, through our history, that targeting specific devices can lead us to pain. So, if we are not targeting specific devices, like a certain brand of mobile phone or a certain brand of tablets or even tablets or smartphones in general, what ought we to do? And the answer is that we should target features. And by features, I mean capabilities of the browser. So this leads me to my next point. If we are targeting features, really, what does that mean? How does that break down into real, actionable development? This is Luke Robleski, and Luke wrote a book called Mobile First that's not too long ago, actually. And Luke's main point in Mobile First was that we need to build for a very constrained environment. We ought to establish what is our constrained target, in this case, mobile devices, and we ought to build for that first. And then from that base, we should progressively enhance toward more sophisticated capabilities. So by doing that, we assume a base set of capabilities, essentially that they can render markup with CSS, and from there we will then detect additional capabilities and light up features as those capabilities are detected. This is a technique known as progressive enhancement. By the way, Luke's book is very good, and I highly recommend it to anyone who is doing web development in general, not just focusing on mobile. So what are the constraints that we are likely to encounter if we're developing for mobile devices? Well, the first one that people think of is low resolution. Although what we're finding nowadays is that low resolution is not as true as it used to be. There are some mobile devices that have pretty high resolutions now. There's also questions regarding pixel density that make the question of resolution pretty confusing. So while that is still a consideration, that is not the base constraint that we used to historically think of it as. Another constraint we see with mobile devices is the input. we don't have a mouse and a keyboard, or if we do, they're awkward and difficult to use at times. Most mobile devices, in fact, now they require touch. Additionally, poor network is one of the key constraints that we deal with mobile devices. We have high latency. We are also likely to have low bandwidth. In some cases, we may have no network connection at all. This is one thing that I found is an assumption we often make when we're dealing with desktop browsers that is not true for mobile devices. So now I've given you sort of a philosophical overview of my project and what we've learned along the way. Let me get into the actual nitty-gritty of the story. So my project, Project Leica, is the spiritual successor, if you will, to Project Silk. Project Silk was a project by Patterns and Practices a little over a year ago, whose focus was on delivering a very rich client experience to modern browsers. By rich client, I mean something that felt like a desktop application rather than a web page. There was a lot of focus on being a single page application, a lot of focus on animation and fluid movement and an immersive experience. So the question we wanted to ask, or rather the question we wanted to answer with Project Leica is, let's assume that we're a company that has an application like the one from Project Silk. And by the way, the project's name, the reference application was Mileage Stats. I'll talk more about that later. But let's assume we have an application like Mileage Stats that Project Silk produced, and now we realize, oh, there's this whole mobile world out there that's growing, that's approaching us like an oncoming train. How can we take our existing application and make it mobile friendly? That was the core question we wanted to address with Project Leica. Well, the first thing to answer when to think about when we ask that question is, why isn't the Silk version of Mileage Stats mobile friendly to begin with? And there are a few reasons, and I wanted to give those to you. One reason is that Silk was sort of built with the assumption that there would be high bandwidth. If you look at the assets that are delivered to the browser, we had very large graphics, we had lots of markup, lots of CSS, and lots of JavaScript. In addition to that, if you try to view the Silk version of Mileage Stats on a small screen, it doesn't really look that good. In fact, it's almost not usable. And finally, Silk also made the assumption that you would be using a mouse and keyboard for your input. And there was no testing done on touch. So just those three assumptions alone made the Mileage Stats application, the Silk version of it, difficult to use on mobile devices. So in order to mobilize the Silk application, in order to make it mobile friendly, we had to figure out what to do. So our first thought was, well, what if we just tweak the existing markup? Because we want to think about ourselves as a startup business maybe that has this existing asset that we want to make mobile friendly. Maybe we can just take the markup and the CSS and JavaScript and we can adapt it, we can modify it. And as we went through the existing assets, we realized, wow, it will be difficult to untangle all of the markup, all of the JavaScript to make it mobile friendly. Probably it would be less work, higher return on investment for us just to rewrite that. Now, we didn't want to rewrite the whole application, mind you. We wanted to keep everything the same as much as possible. And I'll briefly say that this is a ASP.NET MVC3 application initially, and we didn't want to change anything that was from the controller level down. We only wanted to change the views up, and even then, as little as possible. However, in hoping to modify the views, we said, okay, we can't do this. We need to tear them out and completely replace them. Now, this actually afforded us a very good opportunity. What we were able to do at that point is say, okay, if we're going to change these views, if we're going to change the markup, let's rethink the user experience. Without changing any of the domain logic and any of the behavior logic that's embedded in the controllers, how can we improve what the users want to do? So we decided from that point forward that we, with this redesign, that we would have very clean and simple semantic markup, and that we would focus on just delivering the same set of features to the browser, to the mobile browser that we were delivering to the desktop. And this initial version of the application we referred to as Works, because we wanted it to work on as many devices as possible. Now, in this initial version of our mobile Mileage Stats, there was almost no JavaScript at all. It was all markup. And as I said before, it was very clean, simple markup. Now, one thing that's good about simple markup, one consequence of that, is that it's less bits over the wire. So we're already achieving one thing we wanted to do with our project, which was to have less network traffic. We also, though, wanted to take this initial application, and like I said, we wanted it to work on as many devices as possible. So we built it first to work on a very small screens, something like 320 pixels, but we also wanted it to be able to work on tablets. Now, in order to do that, we used a technique called responsive web design. Now, responsive web design is something that uses a property of CSS called media queries to detect the sizes of an application, as well as a few other UI-related things, and allows us to change how the application is rendered or how the site is rendered without actually writing any logic. So there's no JavaScript involved in this. Now let me switch over to this is the mobile version of Mileage Stats, you can see here. And this is the wide version of it right now. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to drag this shut, and we'll see that the application snaps to a different view. This is what you would see on a mobile phone, and when I stretch it larger, it adapts to show what would be displayed on a tablet. So I want to briefly jump over to our code to show you how that is implemented. Here we have the main layout page that is used for all of the mobile applications, and we see our CSS files are linked here at the top. We also have this attribute called media. The way this works is that these CSS files are only downloaded if these media queries evaluate to true. So in the first case here, where we have the default CSS page, we check to see if this is in fact going to be rendered on screen or a handheld device. And if it is, then we provide the default CSS. The other two, they're a little more interesting. We have this only if it's being rendered on screen, and then we provide a minimum width. And what that means is that if these conditions are true, this particular CSS file will be downloaded and will be applied to the page. And that allows us to adapt to the sizes of the client. In addition, you can embed these media queries in the CSS files themselves. Here's one example, and in fact, this is the example we were demonstrating, where we take the extended portion of the screen and we set its width if we are over 1020 pixels. Now, after we got the works version of our application up and running, again, it was just markup and CSS, and we had established feature parity between the mobile version of Mileage Stats and the legacy Silk version of Mileage Stats, we asked ourselves, well, okay, really, what is next? We want to do more than just work. We want to be able to be aware of what the browsers are capable of doing and light up more features as they come. So we decided we would also include a wow experience. Now, for the wow experience, we said, what do we want to do here? And we know that single-page applications are all the rage right now. All the cool kids are doing it, and we wanted to do it too. So what do I mean by a single-page application? I mean that in a traditional web page, when you navigate between the pages, you're making a request to the server. It sends you all the markup, all the CSS, everything you need to render the page for every navigation. With a single-page application, the initial load of the page includes all of the markup and assets that are necessary to run the application, and subsequently, you're using JavaScript to talk to server over XML HTTP requests to get just the data you need, just the little bits that are required to use the application. So, in addition to this being a very popular pattern right now, it also has some technical value. One thing is that what you do across the network is much smaller in general. Also, your application can be much more responsive because of what you're seeing across the network is much smaller. So in order to do this, in order to have a single page application, we knew there were certain features that we needed to detect. Those features were the presence of JavaScript, the presence of JSON in the browser, the presence of the XML HTTP request object, and, believe it or not, the presence of DOM manipulation, which came as a bit of a surprise to me, but apparently there are some browsers out there that support JavaScript but don't allow you to manipulate the DOM. Go figure. So we checked for all those, and if those all were present, we would light up this single-page application. Now, what I want to emphasize here is that we weren't looking for specific browsers by specific vendors. Instead, we were testing for the capabilities that were being exposed, and we were lighting up the feature as they were available. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we check for these features? So in ASP.NET, there is a built-in object. There's a built-in property on the request object called browser. And browser is basically a dictionary of capabilities based upon the current request that's coming in. So you can query this dictionary for things like, hey, are you a mobile device? Do you support JavaScript? In fact, if we look over here, here is the property, is mobile device that is present on this. So we are able to look at this on the incoming request and make decisions about what features the browser has. Now, it's also important to point out here that this is something that's built into ASP.NET. However, there are ways to augment this because this information is always changing. It's usually based upon the user agent string that's coming in as part of the request. And some of the questions can be hard to answer. It can be hard to know what a device is when it's brand new, right? So there are actually a few third-party products out there that allow you to augment this built-in capability of ASP.NET that will look up the user agent string that is passed in as a request and provide additional capabilities listed here. However, one thing that we did in this project was we also emitted a little bit of JavaScript to the browser that would sniff for features we cared about, the ones I listed, like JSON support, the XHR support, and so on and so forth. And if those were present, we wrote them into a cookie. And then in our code, in our application code, we were able to take the base requests, the base set of capabilities that ASP.NET provided to us, and we would merge those into the capabilities that we got from detecting on our client side, the JavaScript capabilities. So I wanted to briefly show you a little bit of code here to show how we did that. This is a class we created called the Mobile Capabilities Provider. It inherits from the HTTP Capabilities Default Provider. And what that does is, in this method, get browser capabilities, we first get the base set of capabilities that ASP.NET is aware of. Then we want to merge in capabilities that we detect from other sources. Now, in our case, our other sources really are twofold. The first source is a third-party database. So we have a function here that says determine capabilities by third-party database. And we're not actually taking a dependency on a real product, but we wanted to demonstrate to you how you could do that manually if need be. The second place here is determine capabilities by profiling client. And what that means is that we're going to check into the JavaScript that we emitted and see what was set in the cookie, and we're going to merge those capabilities back in. So now we have a fuller set of capabilities that we can query on the server side to determine what to do. Now, while I'm here in the code, I want to also jump over to one other important concept that we ran across when we were building this application. And that is this. Whenever you're building a single page application, it is you will be rendering data on the client side of the application. Now, in the legacy version of Project Silk, what this meant was that there were views that were rendered on the server using the Razor view engine, and there were views that were rendered on the client using the now deprecated jQuery plugin called jQuery templates. Now, in the world of Silk, what that meant was that we ended up with two different sets of templates, one that were using the format that was required by jQuery templates and the other that was using Razor. And at the time, that was the best choice. However, there was a pain associated with that, which is that you now had two templates that were very, very similar and had to be maintained in tandem. So if you made a change to one, you had to be sure to make that same change in the other template. And if you didn't, the single page version of the application got out of sync with the non-single page version. So when we were starting the single page feature for Project Leica, we said, wow, this is a pain point that we'd really like to solve, but we didn't know what to do. We investigated options. We looked at other view engines other than Razor to see if there was something that had both client-side and server-side support for rendering. We looked at some implementations where people had tried to render Razor views in JavaScript on the browser, but none of them really fit the bill. So instead, what we decided was, well, why don't we choose a very simple JavaScript templating engine that will meet our needs? We settled on a product called Razor, which is an open source library for rendering very simple, logicless templates. And then we decided, okay, let's have our Razor views be the one source of truth. We want to have some views that represent one source of truth so that we can make a change in one place and have it propagate everywhere. And then what we did was we created a set of helpers that would allow us to render that razor view as a mustache template. So now our razor views can be rendered either as the markup that we expect to send to the browser or as the mustache template. Let me give you a brief example of what that looks like. So this is a template that renders just some details about, that renders a form for recording a reminder about a vehicle and mileage stats. And you can see here that in a few places, instead of it saying HTML, for example, on this line, line 10, instead of saying HTML dot something in the helper, we can say mustache dot text box for. Now what that allows us to do, that helper will be aware of the context we're rendering in, and if we're rendering for HTML, then it will simply do what its sister helper does, the HTML.textbox for. However, if it realizes that we're rendering it for mustache, what it will do is that it will generate the mustache-friendly markup. So to show you what that looks like, let me flip to my desktop and open up a page I have here. So this is what a mustache template looks like. And we can see, maybe off the screen a little bit, and we can see here that we have some strange values that are some strange format that doesn't quite make sense if you haven't used mustache before. But these double curly braces are placeholders that mustache will use to bind the data. So what this is what we want the output to be when we're telling our razor views to render for mustache. Let's go back to our code now. So this one set of razor templates here can be used to render either way. And in order to enable that, if we look over in our mobile layout at the top, we will see that we have this conditional here, a check to say if we should enable the single page experience, then we're going to include the SPA templates. And if we look at that, what we see is we have a whole series of templates here where we call this helper message. It says render as a mustache template. So that sets a little bit of context that allows our helpers to know, oh, I should render based upon the model being passed into me to result in regular HTML, or I should be rendering as a mustache template. Okay, so now that I've talked a little bit about the works in the WoW experience, let me flip back to my slide deck. I wanted to talk about the logic on the server that helped us to decide which one of these experiences to light up. Now, whenever a request comes in, we first begin by asking this question, hey, browser, are you a desktop or not? And if it answers yes, then we send them to the legacy experience. And if they answered no, then we ask an additional question. We say, hey, can you do all this JavaScripty stuff that we need? That is, do you support XHR? Do you support JSON? And if they say no, then we send them to the Works experience. And if they say yes, we send them to the WoW experience. Now, this may seem a little bit contradictory, right, to what I discussed earlier. It seems almost like we're targeting specific devices or specific types of devices instead of sniffing for features. And in fact, that question, that bothered us. When we realized we were asking this, we were like concerned. So we said, well, instead of asking, are you a desktop, is there a set of features that we can query to determine if we should send them to the legacy version versus the Works the WoW version? And we said, you know, the things that the legacy experience needs are things like high bandwidth, low latency, maybe a fast processor. And what we realized is those things are really hard to detect. Those features are difficult to determine. And so even though we would prefer to check this based upon features, there wasn't really a way for us to do that. Now, there are some libraries out there now, some JavaScript libraries that are trying to do that exact thing. But at the time we started this project, they weren't at the maturity level that we needed for where we're at. So that is something worth looking into. However, what we also found was that we tended to get false positives when we asked this question. For example, a recent e-reader, though I will leave unnamed, reported itself as a desktop when we asked this question. So what we also realized was, well, you know, it's better to assume that the browser is coming from a mobile device and to only send it the legacy experience if we're confident that it is actually a desktop browser. And then we get fewer false positives in that. Well, this also led us to another interesting observation. As we moved from, as we added more features to the mobile version of the application, and it achieved feature parity with a desktop version, and in fact, in some cases, we actually exceeded the features of the desktop version, went a little bit beyond it. This is, over time, the value of the two different experiences here. And as we also realized that it's hard to qualify the desktop here in terms of features, we realized, well, what is the value of the desktop? Why do we have the desktop? And what we realized is that in terms of there being a mobile web, there is no mobile web. Now let that point sink in. One of our big conclusions in this project was that the distinction between what is a mobile device and what is a desktop device is rapidly fading. And in a few years, we probably won't even be able to distinguish these between these two classes of devices. And in fact, once your mobile version of your site or application is ready, it may be time to eclipse and to retire the legacy version of your application. So in my opinion, the whole idea of the mobile web is really something that's transitional. It's something we're doing as a stopgap solution right now as mobile devices are becoming more and more relevant to our situation. So I want to leave you with a few links, a few articles to read. One thing that I found very interesting was this article in TechCrunch recently published called "The Number of Mobile Devices Will Exceed the World's Population by 2012 and Other Shocking Figures." I'd also encourage you to watch a presentation on SlideShare by Brian Rieger called "Rethinking the Mobile Web." And finally, I would like to encourage you to go to our project site, Project Leica. It is hosted on GitHub at github.com/LIIKE. And at this point, feel free to harass me on Twitter or to go to my blog and leave nice comments. At this point, I will take any questions from the Twitterverse.